ladies and gentlemen, may I wish you a very Merry Christmas. My name's Hereward Fenton, and you're tuned to Truth News Radio Australia on the 17th of December 2016. Well, folks, what I just said to you there actually contains a coded message. For those who are tuned in and aware of the current trends in Western civilization, you will no doubt have taken note of my introductory sentence and realised that that it wasn't just a courtesy and a friendly welcome. It was also a signal that in my presentation of this show and in my communication to the audience, that I am I'm making reference to a culture and a civilization which is thousands of years old and which derives from a Christian heritage. And there are a number of traditional aspects to that, part of which is embedded in our language in terms of gender when we talk of ladies and gentlemen, and of course part of which is in the phrase Merry Christmas, which of course harks back to the birth of the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, I say this to you not as a church-going Christian. I call myself more of an agnostic, although I'm actually interested in religion, but I don't profess a religion, and I'm very open to the insights of all spiritual traditions. And I think Christianity is very important. And I also find Buddhism has a strong appeal to me, and some other offshoots of Zen Buddhism and Taoism that were practiced in East Asia over the last couple of thousand years also have a great appeal to me in terms of the deeper metaphysical insight, the spiritual insight into who we are or who I am, who the I is indeed, what is every individual, what are we? And these are very important. Indeed, this is the groundwork of civilization. It's foolish to even call it important. It is the groundwork from which culture emerges. And so when I welcomed you to the show today as ladies and gentlemen and wished you a very Merry Christmas, I was making a statement of who I am and where I stand in history and where I'm from, culturally speaking. Now, this is very important because we've reached a point in time in Western societies where it seems like the whole framework of culture and civilization is being, from some quarters, that attempt is being made to tear all this down and to replace language and to also replace our cultural symbols with generic, secular, gender-neutral forms of culture, which, in fact, to my mind, represents an attempt to impose a new type of culture. Those who promote this, those who are the flag bearers of what they call inclusiveness, say, no, it's just about removing the prejudices, being inclusive, allowing everyone to have a voice. But in fact, what the reality is that it is actually creating a new type of cultural phenomenon. And I'm going to be talking a little about that on today's show. Got a couple of stories to cover there. And I'm also going to be reflecting on, well, actually, a lot of what I say in today's show kind of extends from that, because it goes into very important world events, a very important transition, and I think a transition for the better, which is coterminous with the election of Donald Trump. And I'm not saying this as a great a follower of Donald Trump, as a devotee of Donald Trump. That's not my intention here, and it's not where I'm really coming from. But I really do see the rise of Donald Trump and the election of Donald Trump as being an incredibly important signal to show that we are perhaps changing direction, or we are moving into a new phase of Western civilization where we are going to be perhaps restoring some of our culture, not in a redneck way, not in a reactionary way, but in a way that that embraces the richness of who we are. You see, every part of the world has a tradition. People have traditions, and we don't resent those countries that are steeped in tradition from protecting that. I mean, countries like Japan, a country like Thailand, which I've spent a fair bit of time in, these countries have rich cultural heritage, and their traditions, their festivals, their celebrations are greatly held in pride. And of course, they become a major attraction for tourism, and no one would dare accuse the Thais who have their water festival and their flower festival and their various things that they do of being racist because of that, because they don't include, because, you know, let's face it, Thailand has a lot of Muslims, right? But Thailand is officially a Buddhist nation, and Thailand does not persecute its Muslims, but it isn't construed that because Thailand officially promotes its own traditional holiday and festival themes, that it's somehow being detrimental to Muslims. But in Australia, and similarly in the United States and much of Europe, what's happened is that this attempt to secularize society, to strip it out of its symbols, has really accelerated in the last couple of decades. And people who promote it think that they're doing so with good intentions. They think it's about removing oppression. But then, and that's most of the people, the average people who promote it. But then when you look at the people who are more on the kind of activist end, people who have political influence, you find that it's not quite so simple as that. And I want to talk a little about that in today's show as well, because this bleeds into another topic, which is, of course, the LGBT normalization and promotion within our society, and the programs such as the Safe Schools Coalition anti-bullying program, which again is another type of attempt to promote what they call inclusiveness, that this actually has people within it that have a very strong political agenda. And we'll be getting into a little bit of that later on in the show. But let's begin with the pro-Christmas uprising. And I've got an audio clip here of Peter Dutton, Australia's immigration minister, on radio, talking about the need for a pro-Christmas uprising against political correctness gone mad. Article here that goes with it from the Sydney Morning Herald. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton has called for Australians to rise up to defend Christmas against what he labelled political correctness gone mad. Angered by a talkback radio caller whose grandchild's school eschewed traditional carols for a secular celebration, Mr. Dutton said, "The vast majority of Australian people want to hear Christmas carols, as we are a Christian society." Now, the particular person here from Queensland told the station that he attended a ceremony at Kedron State School where there was not one Christmas carol, and the final song replaced the lyrics of "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" with "We Wish You a Happy Holiday." Now, this phenomenon of blotting out the word Christmas is not restricted to that school or Queensland or Australia even. It's happening in the United States. It's happening in Europe. It's happening almost below the radar. It's not really been clear what the directives are behind this. It almost seems as if people who are in positions of authority are spontaneously making decisions. And it's very, very insidious, ladies and gentlemen. I have to say, it really, really is a very, very disturbing phenomenon, especially because it is actually happening so insidiously. And it's almost, it's very difficult to actually combat it. I've got another story here from The Telegraph, and this is in relation to Christmas banners from December 14, 2016. Christmas banners without the C word have been torn down after a minister intervened. So this is from the Daily Telegraph. Bonkers bureaucrats are trying to kill Christmas by airbrushing the C word from signs and events in a mad, misguided attempt to avoid offending people. Flags with the nonsensical slogan "Very Merry," avoiding using the word Christmas, were torn down in the rocks yesterday after no-nonsense Finance Minister Dominic Perrottet intervened. "Very merry means absolutely nothing to anyone," Mr. Perrottet said. "When you leave out the one word that matters, all you're left with is a vacuous, bland platitude. It's a nonsense." The flags were put up by an agency within the finance department, but were ripped down on Mr. Perrottet's direct orders following a complaint from a taxpayer. And the flags are to be replaced with designs proudly emblazoned with "Merry Christmas." Now, over at Sydney Airport, signs in the domestic terminal read, "Happy Holidays to All, and to All a Good Flight," a subversion of the final line from the famous poem "A Visit to St. Nicholas," popularly known as "The Night Before Christmas." The true line of the poem reads, "Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night." Christian Democrat Fred Nile is livid about the attempts to kill Christmas. "It's a trend, and I'm very angry about it. I don't want any of this happy holiday business." Now, let me say, I'm no great supporter of Fred Nile. I think Fred Nile, he's entitled to his opinion. He's been accused of being somewhat bigoted. I don't agree with all his views. But, ladies and gentlemen, and I will keep saying the phrase "ladies and gentlemen," we must really reflect on the consequences of tearing down the superstructure of a culture that is thousands of years old in such a hasty and ill-considered way. We're going to break. When we come back, I'll be continuing with these reflections. You're with Truth News Radio. A great pleasure to be with you today. Hi, welcome back here with Truth News Radio. And I'm talking today about the war on Christmas and the broader concepts of the battle of inclusiveness versus traditionalism. And I'm going to play to you the clip of Peter Dutton talking on radio about this. And then I'm going to try and go into it a little deeper, as I like to do on this show. Now, I think Peter Dutton's comments reflect the kind of common sense, superficial understanding of what the problem is. But I think even he doesn't really grasp what's going on here. And indeed, that it's much more than just about Christmas. It's much more than just about Christian versus other religious values. We're going to be getting into a lot more stuff. And I'm going to try and explain my understanding of what's going on, and also going to link it to what's happening in the United States with Donald Trump. So I think it's going to be an interesting little journey here. So let me begin with Peter Dutton, and then I'll continue with my comments on that.
You make my blood boil with these stories. It is political correctness gone mad. I think people just had enough of it. Same with these teachers going to schools wearing shirts, political slogans on. I think the majority of teachers are embarrassed by their behaviour and their conduct, and if they want to conduct these sort of campaigns, do it online or do it in your spare time, but don't bring these sort of views into the minds of young kids. And many of the people, regardless of their religious belief, would be there, happy to sing along with Christmas carols, happy to enjoy the fact that we celebrate Christmas as a Christian society, and it's beyond my comprehension. It's gone too far, and this reminds me a bit of back in '93 when Paul Keating was Prime Minister, where people were walking on eggshells with what they said, anyway, people had a gutful of it, and I think we're back to the same stage now. And I think we need to rise up against it. People need to speak against it as they are, because the vast majority of Australian people want to hear Christmas carols. They want their kids to be brought up in a normal environment, and they don't want to be lectured to by do-gooders who, frankly, don't practice what they preach in any case. We send our kids to school to be properly educated, principally to be taught in English, maths, and arithmetic, and we want to make sure that they get the basics right, and if teachers are concentrating their efforts and their time on all of this nonsense, then it's a distraction away from the core business of school.
Okay. My take on this is that, of course, Peter Dutton is right in what he says, but in his attempt to explain it as a problem created by a few misguided activists here and there, this fails to take into account that what we seem to have is a coordinated global program going on. This is happening in so many different English-speaking countries around the world simultaneously. It's more than just the spontaneous actions of a few people who kind of a bit carried away with themselves. There is a concerted agenda going on here, and we have to try and understand it. Yeah, honestly, if you don't understand it, you won't be able to fight it. And of course, it all comes under this the umbrella term of inclusiveness, which I've attempted to explain previously on this show through the concept of cultural Marxism, which has become a sort of de facto political philosophy, even though it's not admitted as such by the left, and really has become more and more strident and dogmatic in the past 20 to 30 years. And it cuts across many different areas of society. The aim always appears to be overtly to promote harmony, to include people, to not exclude people, to not be prejudiced against people, and to not incite prejudice against people. And on the face of it, that's a noble goal. But rather than be preaching tolerance, and the famous words of Voltaire, that I can tolerate everything except intolerance, right? Rather than taking the Voltairean Enlightenment position of tolerance, those who promote this go way, way beyond. It's way beyond tolerance. It's about aggressively promoting a new culture, a new form of behavior, and it's about inculcating that culture into children through the schools, through advertising campaigns, through all kinds of advertising and government platforms to change the way people think and act. And a large part of it is about destroying the concept of patriarchy, which of course was one of the key goals of radical feminism. And radical feminists have seen it, the patriarchy, as being the cause of all the woes in society. And going hand in hand with that, of course, is the aggressive, assertive promotion of non-binary or alternate forms of sexuality to condition people, and to begin with children in schools, to divest them of the concept of the male-female split being central to our society, to divorce them from concepts of marriage as being the union of the opposites of male and female, and about the sacred union that produces children, that perpetuates the human species. The aim is to strip all that away and to create a new type of society. And the only correct word that I can think of to describe that new type of society is transhumanist. Now, apparently, the dating site Tinder, the dating app Tinder, now accepts 32 different gender definitions. Like when you sign up, there's 32 different genders, or maybe it's 72, I can't remember. Look, it's a lot. Facebook now has a whole range of them too. So what's actually happened is that the corporate media giants have leapt onto this, and those with control over policy have leapt onto it, as we've seen with the Christmas signs, Christmas being scrubbed out and just having very merry. And as we see in schools, and we don't know how many schools are spontaneously removing the word Christmas from their songs, from their celebrations that are held at this time of the year. Now, I want to talk a little about Safe Schools Coalition, because, of course, this is, a very important part of this whole program of inclusiveness. Now, it turns out that one of the key people in Safe Schools Coalition, this is a supposedly an anti-bullying campaign that was rolled out nationally in Australia. The founder of that, Roz Ward, turns out is a fairly hardcore Marxist with a very, very strong political agenda. It turns out that a few months ago, on her Facebook page, she posted the following statement. "Now we just need to get rid of the racist Australian flag on top of the state parliament and get a red one up there, and my work is done." Now, Roz Ward, who is looks like a non-binary sort of person, her gender is very hard to determine, and they do refer to her as a female. I don't know, she doesn't look like a female. Anyway, that's sort of irrelevant. But when we get back, I'll be going into more of this. You're with Truth News Radio. We'll be right back. welcome back to the Truth News Radio. So today I'm exploring themes of tradition versus inclusiveness, the war on Christmas, and the war on gender. And I'm just talking here about Safe Schools Coalition and Ros Ward. Now, after Ros Ward posted that inflammatory comment on her Facebook page, she was briefly suspended from the university, and that was actually a while ago. It was just getting the article up here. Safe Schools. Okay, and I've got an article here actually from 2nd of June. So the title of the article is from, it's from The Guardian, Australian academic Ros Ward suspended for calling country's flag racist. Ros Ward posted a picture of the LBGTI flag flying above the Victorian Parliament last week with the comment, "Now we just need to get rid of the racist Australian flag on top of the state parliament and get a red one up there, and my work is done." So this was in response to the Victorian Parliament in a gracious hat tip to the LGBT movement flying their flag. But as you can see, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, she is a hardcore political apparatchik, Marxist, right? And this illustrates what happens when those in power attempt to ingratiate themselves with such fanatical, extremist political forces, is that they take that and then they say, now we want more. Because, you know, we don't want your magnanimity. We don't want you to give us your little flag raising to make us happy. No, we want to take you. We want to own you. We're going to raise our flag permanently, and it's actually going to be the red flag. It's almost like she's saying, look, this was just a cover, right? This is an insurgency. We're going to take over society, and then my work is done. Now, there's a more recent article here. So she was briefly suspended from the university, and her job there was manager of the Safe Schools program, which is administered by La Trobe University's Sex, Health and Society Research Centre. And a letter was sent to her saying that she had breached her employment conditions by undermining public confidence in Safe Schools. But then, lo and behold, she was reinstated just a few days later. It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. She was reinstated because the university decided against pursuing misconduct allegations against her. I mean, she said she wanted to raise the red flag above Parliament. But no, we can't hold that against her, right? I mean, look, I mean, you know, we've got to give her a job back and make sure that she's still in charge of children and, you know, having the presiding influence over a program which is nationwide, which is teaching children about how to behave socially. And you know, she said that her agenda is basically to bring about a communist takeover of the country, and that really that's her main goal. But, you know, that's fine. We won't hold that against her. We'll give her a job back. Yeah. And we'll apologise. So, it turns out, 6 months later, that she is now finally being kicked out. The Andrews government, that's the state government of Victoria, and this was just posted 9 hours ago today on the 17th of December 2016, the Andrews government says its decision to cut ties with the founder of Safe Schools, Ros Ward, has nothing to do with recent controversies embroiling her. Oh, well, that's a pity. But anyway, at least they've cut ties. Education Minister James Merlino said the Department of Education would take over the running of the anti-bullying campaign, ending its contract with La Trobe University 6 months early. Ah, I see. So it's not actually, La Trobe hasn't given her the sack. She's still in there. And of course, La Trobe is a kind of a hotbed of people just like her who have some very bizarre views indeed, which I'll get into in a moment. But clearly, the state government is simply detaching from La Trobe University. Yeah, so suspension sparked a social media campaign calling for her to be returned. And indeed, what's characteristic of the political movement that she belongs to is that it is very well tuned to manipulating society, to manipulating policy through activism. And these people are professional at it, and they have hordes of kind of rent-a-crowd people who can be turned on at a moment's notice. And organisations like GetUp have been created specifically for that purpose. In fact, it may even have been GetUp involved in getting her back her job. But let's have a look at some other aspects of La Trobe University. Because there is a professor there who has also been heavily involved in the Safe Schools program. He was a major consultant, and he is a professor. His name is Gary Dowsett. And he's been a professor at La Trobe University for quite some time. And he's also a homosexual activist. Now, the information I'm about to give you, I've talked about this on the show before, but it's been a while now, so probably need to go through it again in more detail. Gary Dowsett has been a homosexual activist most of his life, or certainly his adult life. And back in the 1980s, he wrote an article for the journal Gay Information. And this journal was published by a Sydney-based organisation called Gay Information Services. The article was titled Boiled Lollies and Band-Aids, Gay Men and Kids. And if that title doesn't get your blood boiling, just wait till what you're about to hear. And this is genuine. This really happened. I'm not making this up. This is not fake news, ladies and gentlemen. This really happened. Maybe it's probably less likely to get published these days with the much more attention being given to pedophilia. But the fact that even 30 years ago that it was allowed to be published is it's a window. It's a window into an aspect of this burgeoning culture they call inclusiveness, of what some of the people behind it, what some of the key people behind it are basically on about. A few excerpts from the article here by Gary Dowsett. And the whole title and the concept of the story is about gay men and kids, right? So just get ready. Yeah, brace yourself. Quote number one. First, we have three legal/social questions to win. Custody rights for gay men and lesbians. The legal right of pedophiles and their young loves. And finally, the sexual rights of children as a whole. So I'll just read you that again. Custody rights for gay men and lesbians, number one. Number two, the legal right of pedophiles and their young loves? What? What did I just say? And finally, the sexual rights of children. Fascinating, isn't it? There's more to come. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. It's a great pleasure to be talking to you today. I'll be right back.
in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying, something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point...
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Now, I'm referring here to this article by Gary Dowsett in the context of the controversy over Safe Schools Coalition, inclusiveness, and the banning of the word Christmas, and these various things that are going on. But I'm trying to penetrate deeper into the mind of those who are behind these campaigns. And this article about Gary Dowsett, by Gary Dowsett, was tabled in Parliament by Conservative MP George Christensen. And, you know, when it first appeared, I actually thought it was fake. A lot of people couldn't believe it was real. No one could believe that someone who's now a professor could have written such words, but it all checked out, and he certainly has never denied it. So just reading to you another quote here from this article that was published in 1982. I also have a friend, a pedophile. He blandly says that I have a friend who's a pedophile. Ooh, okay. Do you understand what's going on here? Like, this is about normalization of pedophilia. This is inclusiveness gone mad. This is like, we've got to be inclusive towards pedophiles. I also have a friend, a pedophile, who is working very hard on making sense out of his relations with boys. Yeah, I imagine a lot of rapists and serial killers as well, you know, have trouble making sense out of it. You know, like I'm with a girl, I make love and then I strangle her, and it's like, you know, why do I do that? I don't know. I mean, shall we be inclusive? Shall we be inclusive to men who strangle women? After all, it could be just that they need to do that. It's just a suggestion. Anyway, sorry, I'm digressing. Let's get back here to the article that was penned by Professor Gary Dowsett of La Trobe University. He says here that these relations, these pedophile relationships, consist of, among other things, a large amount of nurture and support for these boys and a real caring for their welfare and growth. Next quote. How different, then, is that gentle, tentative sexuality between parent and child from the love of a pedophile and his or her lover? From all their accounts and from many academic studies, that kind of love, warmth, support and nurture is an important part of the pedophilic relationship. Next quote. The current pedophilia debate, then, is crucial to the political processes of the gay movement. Pedophiles need our support, and we need to construct the child-adult sex issue on our terms. Now, before you react to this and just go crazy and want to, you know, smash this guy's brains in, okay, understand, I'm just trying to present this to you on a forensic level, right? I want to understand what's going on here deeper. And, of course, there are people with toxic views. There are narcissists and psychopaths in society, and we know they exist, and I don't want to kill them. You know, I think they're dangerous. I think they need to be contained. But, you know, I don't believe in retribution on that level. And if this was simply a case of some rogue individual who had posted comments, so be it. You know, it's unpleasant. The guy's sick. But if he's not a criminal, there's probably not a lot you can do about it. If he hasn't actually himself acted out any of these behaviours that he attributes to his so-called friend, which again is very suspicious, isn't it? You know, when people talk about their friend, it's often a way of cover for talking about yourself, but look, who knows? And I'm certainly not making any allegations of that. I honestly have no idea. I'm only taking it at face value. So, what's going on here? Pay attention to the language. He says the current pedophilia debate is crucial to the political processes of the gay movement. Now, this is extremely important, ladies and gentlemen, because this is a man who is very influential, who has reached the top of academia in Australia and has helped guide programs which every child is going to be subjected to in every school throughout the great land of Australia. The paedophilia debate is being framed in this way. He's calling it a debate. There's really never been a debate, but you know they want there to be a debate. Those who promote paedophilia see it as an inclusiveness theme, that we must begin to be inclusive of people who have a paedophilic orientation. There was an article in Salon.com, which a lot of people have seen. It was written by a paedophile, and the title is something like, "I'm a paedophile but not a monster." And it was about a man saying that that he's a good person, he just happens to be a paedophile, and that we have to learn to accept and trust paedophiles in our society. Again, this is about inclusiveness. Now, of course, the Salon.com article doesn't advocate the acting out of paedophiles. Paedophiles' urges, and that the article specifically says that you know he restrains himself, and he actually in the article, I don't actually have it here, but I'll put a link to it. He says something like, "Yeah, he deserves special brownie points because he actually restrains himself from acting out his urges." Again, it would be like a psychopathic serial killer saying, "Look, you know." I'm a serial killer, but I haven't killed anyone yet. But I want to. Oh, yeah, I really dream about it. You know, I'd love to strangle women, but, you know, I don't do it. And because of that, you should, like, give me extra brownie points because I actually restrain myself. I'm better than you, right? Because I don't act out my impulses, whereas you, a conventional, cisgendered heterosexual, you can just act out your impulses. I'm more noble. This is one of the arguments that is actually being used. But what's very important to understand is that this is framed as part of the overall political strategy, which has now been embraced at the highest levels, and we saw Obama fully embrace it and fly the rainbow flag at the White House. And as you read there in the article before, they were flying the LGBTI flag over Parliament. So these people want to transition society into something quite different. And I'm focusing here on the pedophile question because it illustrates just how different the type of society they want to create is from the one that you and I grew up in. Okay, we now are almost at the end of the show, but I want to just briefly tie this back to the phenomenon of Donald Trump. Because, among other things, Donald Trump has become the flag bearer for a return to some of the traditional roots of Western culture and civilization. Of course, there are many other platforms that he has advocated, which are very important. And this particular one is not one that's been the major one on my radar. But what I can see is that For example, Trump has said that he's going to start, that he's going to get people celebrating Christmas again, because this problem about Christmas being scrubbed out is rampant in the US. And Trump has explicitly said in recent speeches that that we're going to be saying Merry Christmas again. And we see this, this is perhaps at the very root of Trump's challenge to the agenda of the hidden oligarchy, the shadow government. We might even call it the global shadow government, or cryptocracy, a word that's sometimes used, meaning a government that is hidden around the world. Because Trump is challenging the underlying cultural Marxism, the inclusiveness political agenda, which we've seen from people like Ros Ward, is directly tied to a communist agenda. And we've seen from people like Gary Dowsett, has a very sinister and worrying underbelly. And Trump has determined to oppose political correctness, to bring back certain aspects of traditionalism, but not in a way to persecute people either. He's been quite inclusive in his own sense, in his own way, in relation to gay issues. And indeed, many of the so-called alt-right are not anti-gay. I mean, we've got Milo Yiannopoulos, one of the key people right at the core of the alt-right movement, so-called, who's a gay man. But, you know, he regularly calls himself a faggot, and he doesn't care if other people call him a faggot too. He's not trying to enforce political correctness, and he's not trying to be the flag bearer of the communist transhumanist revolution. So again, and this illustrates a very important point, is that those, and I count myself among these, those who are against that transhumanist, inclusiveness, communist plot are not anti-gay. And we have no problem with gay people. And we tolerate difference. We're at the end of the show. I wish you a very, very Merry Christmas, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back before New Year with another show. It's been a great pleasure talking to you today. See you again soon. Thank you.